Going Linux episode 480, listener feedback. No viruses, no fuss, just simple and clean, going Linux. It's the ultimate dream, forget the crashes and the constant lag with open source. You're never gonna sag. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Bill.
Whether you're new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
We hope that you find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and open source applications and using them to get things done.
If you want to send us feedback, you can send us email at goinglinux@gmail.com or a voicemail at 1-904-468-7889.
In today's episode, listener feedback.
Hello, Bill.
Hey, Larry. How is your day?
Early, but so far so good. How about you?
Life is much better with coffee.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, good. And I know that in previous episodes you had mentioned about getting some hearing aids, and I know when we were talking last you said you hadn't got them. Any news on that front?
No, we're still fighting over the whole thing. I've gotten everything done up until getting them, but you sent me a link that I might use temporarily until we figure out this, because this is a slow roll as far as a fight.
Yeah, I know the one I sent you is less expensive. I don't know whether it has all the features that you're looking for, but my understanding is it's made with the same components as the expensive ones, mm-hmm. but they're just not taking as much profit on it. And they don't have as much overhead. So if you do try it, let us know how it is.
I will.
Okay, well, enough of that. I think we should probably just get into our email. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. In our last episode, we invited listener feedback to help us shape the future of the Going Linux podcast. We questioned if the current release frequency, the episode length, and topics are meeting our users' and listeners' needs. We're looking to refine the show's format while remaining dedicated champions for Linux and helping users to get things done. Prior to our request for this feedback, we received an email from Daniel who asked a simple question. Any idea if Orca is built into the installation image of Catchy OS? So Daniel is a blind computer user, and that's why he's asking about Orca. And for those who don't know what Orca is, it's the Linux screen reader that pretty much everyone using Linux relies on to be able to understand what's going on a computer screen if they can't see it. So, Bill, any thoughts on this? I still haven't tried Catchy OS, so I don't really know. Do you happen to know?
I do not know.
Okay.
That's a good question. I did not even think about that when I installed it.
Yeah.
And what does the Google say? So, apparently, the answer is yes. It does have the, has, starting from 2025, includes the Orca screen reader and eSpeak-NG built into assist visually impaired users. I did not know that. So, I guess it does.
So, yeah, sounds good. Now, the next question, of course, is going to be, can you get it to start running Orca on boot up? So, to look into, yeah.
Okay, so if you use the live installer built in and it's available, I do not know how you'd get started, but of course, okay. You know, with anything, I would say we'd want to verify that.
Yeah, absolutely. November 2005 update focuses on accessibility improvements and broadens hardware support for its users. Notably, the installer now includes the Orca screen reader and eSpeakNG speech synthesizer, enabling visually impaired users to more easily navigate the installation process. Aha! So they're specifically saying that's included on the installation media, but it doesn't specifically say whether it is enabled by default when you first start using.
There's probably a key that you have to hit like all the others, or a timeout function.
Yeah, it could very well be. Okay, so there you go. And I think with a little more experimentation with CacheOS, we could figure this out.
Sure. All right. So we have received feedback from some of our regular listeners, as we hoped that they would be blunt and honest. So we're thanking everybody. Thank you. Since most of them are very long, we're going to comment about each one and each response as we go to kind of keep things uniform and easy to understand. So yep. The first one comes from Lee, whose response was, in fact, in response to our request. So he writes, "Hello, Larry and Bill. This is Lee, per call-in radio. I'm a short-time listener, first-time participant, responding to your number 479 request for feedback. I'm going to respond to all of your show notes, including those items outside of your questions, just because." I like this guy already. "If I've muddled answers to your questions, please let me know, and I'll try to explain my logic." So he starts at the very beginning, going with Excel when we're introducing any, and asking, and we're asking about our opinion for the future. And he writes, "As someone who hosted a small annual professional conference, I appreciate that it can be hard to get feedback from your audience, but without feedback, it's hard to steer the car to the appropriate destination. You always encourage, but your extra interest this time inspired me to respond. For your information, I listen to a variety of podcasts, political, religious, sports, and two about Linux, yours and Late Night Linux. This is the first time I've provided feedback to any." So, we appreciate that.
Well, we certainly appreciate it, and thank you for responding.
So, he says, you know, Bill's CacheOS is still running well, and it is, and it's still running well today. So we'll just continue on with that. He says, "My wife and I are retired. Our only experience was with Windows projects except for early 80s when we owned a K-Pro." I don't know what a K-Pro is.
They were an 80s manufacturer of a computer, desktop kind of computer, if I remember correctly.
Really? I'd never heard of them. Okay.
Yeah.
He said, "We own two laptops for daily drivers and other machines inherited from deceased relatives. When faced with buying two machines due to Windows 11, I decided to experiment with Linux, trying to extend the life of existing hardware." He said, "I chose Linux Mint as our daily driver in 2019 and 2021 CPUs. I should be satisfied based on our positive experience, but it's still a comfort to hear Larry talk about using Mint. I'm not sure why his change validates my choice, but it does."
Yeah.
It's also fun to hear Bill talk about distro hopping. That made me curious enough that we now have backup machines using Mint XFCE on a 2010 CPU and LMDE on a 2017 CPU. And I used the 2010 CPU to experiment with other Linux distros." Okay. Any comments?
Yeah. Well, the whole idea of extending the life of your computing hardware using Linux has been around for quite a while, and I see you're making great use of it. I'm not sure that in today's world, a 2021, was it 2021 he said?
Yes.
Yeah. A 2019 or a 2021 is really, really old computing. I have, I think it's 2017 computer that still runs the full version of Linux Mint without any hassle or problem at all. Now, when you get to the 2010 CPU, Mint XFCE, the lightweight version of Mint is great. And I'm glad you're getting some good use out of Linux Mint and extending that 2010 computer out to be able to use it today.
Okay. So he also goes on and says, congratulations on finding a reasonable solution to renewing your license.
That's your amateur radio license,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
But I do want to make, I can't remember which one. I read all this, the emails that you sent me. Mm-hmm. And someone said, asked me how long I waited until I just finally paid to have the problem solved. They were talking about a driver that they can't wait that long. And I get it, but I think it's two different things. And one, I did try for about 3 weeks to try to figure this out. I finally, after it got to the point that it's like, I don't have time. I can't keep messing with this. I just finally had W5YI do it for me. So I tried. I just didn't have any more time to throw at it. So at a certain time, you're just like, okay, here, take my money to solve this problem because I've tried to solve it and I can't. So anyway. We asked, we don't know if, I think we may have stated it actually, that computer users today don't want to really tinker. And he wrote, yes and no. He says, we agree. We have talked to many folks nearly or actually retired who bought a new PC because of Windows 11. When I hint at moving to Linux, that maybe there is another option, I seldom see much interest. Disagree.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, that's kind of a common response I get as well.
Yeah. So, and then of course he says, disagree. It is fun to listen to the four folks of Late Night Links talk about their tinkering there, and you're introducing new software or ideas, articles about home labs, encourages me to tinker. Today, I'm curious about using Tailscale to share photos with our distant kids without using cloud services and staying safe from tracking and hacking. 20 months ago, I didn't know such options existed, let alone for zero. I came to your pod because I was looking for someone to reassure me that this was doable, and there were multiple resources to assist me. Looking at Mint Forum community, I stay with your podcast because of your dynamic and hopefully to pick up some new news and or pointers.
Yeah, I can see both reactions to not wanting to tinker or wanting to tinker. I think they're both kinds of people out there. And as we consider changes to the way this podcast will go in the future, something to think about. And we'll make a decision on how to structure for those people who are tinkerers or who want to mess with Linux. and for those people who just want to get things done. So good points. And I think you've laid out quite well some of the thinking there.
So I will have to interject here, Larry, that, you know, when I first joined the podcast, you know, it was like every week. It was a running joke. Was I still running what I was running 7 days ago? You know, I was always jumping. But as I get older and just need to get things done and just want it to work, I find that I like, you know, just staying on one, unless something. I mean, I've been on Cashy now for, I don't think it's been a year yet, but it's been a good, I'd say, 6 months, 7 months, and I'm perfectly happy with it. It runs well. So I think as you, when you start looking at the whole ecosystem of Linux and open source, you kind of find what works for you. Mm-hmm. And you soon realize that all Linuxes can, distributions can do just about everything. Some will work better for things that you want. Some have a different release schedule, stuff like that. But you just kind of pick one, and if it works, just use it. Because, you know, you're still going to, if you're having a problem, try to fix it. And if you, you know, there's a lot of great resources, but the nice part about Linux is that a lot of stuff that we faced when we first started has been fixed for years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not saying there's not newer problems, but a lot of stuff was already fixed, like sound cards and modems and video cards. A lot of that's already done. So it's kind of, Linux has kind of matured. So now it's more of pick your flavor and pick, you know, like I, for instance, I love this rolling release thing. I always have the latest hard software for, and but some would probably wouldn't want it because it's frequent updates. Or some businesses might not have a connect system, so they need something that will work. And this will work too, but, you know, with it, they don't need as much connection to the internet. You know, they don't need to check it every day. So it's all about what makes you, what you're comfortable with. So that's the only thing I want to say is I've kind of matured to the point I don't tinker quite as much as I used to. Just because I would spend so much time changing stuff, I wouldn't get to actually, you know, use the hardware. So, or in software. So, just wanted to point that out is that there is no right answer to any of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've grown to feel the same way. I have gone from a tinkerer on an everyday basis to somebody who just, as our slogan says, just using Linux to get things done. And that's more my attitude than anything else. I hear it more and more, as I mentioned in the last episode, I hear it more and more from computer users and people who work with computer users that they, as a generalization, people just want things to work.
Yeah.
More and more than they did before. So we want to be sensitive to those folks, but we don't want to lose from our podcast the people who are interested in doing the tinkering and exploring new things on Linux. So we'll consider that as well.
Yeah, and I think our tinkering has now moved more from the operating system to actually ways to make it work better and software that makes our lives easier. So,
yes, exactly.
With that, we're going to go on to the next point. And we said, and we had stated that users just expect their computer to just work. They just want it to work.
Yeah.
And he says, I agree. This is true for a majority of people. I wouldn't be in this deep except for Windows 11 for forcing my hand after I retired. And we get it.
Yeah, exactly. And I really think that the increase in adoption of Linux in recent years has been greatly accelerated by the introduction of Windows 11 by Microsoft.
Thank you. I don't know.
trying to force people to upgrade computers and then finding out that your computer is, quote, not capable of running Windows 11. And I put that intentionally in quotation marks because many computer researchers have found that, yes, you can make Windows 11 install on hardware that Microsoft determines is not capable. I think they just want to sell more computers, but that's just my opinion.
I kind of agree with you. So our next question was, does our current release schedule work for you? And he says, for new arrivals like me, your offerings are mostly timeless. I reach back to your archives to learn vocabulary and learn how to solve certain problems. But for folks submitting questions, they're likely better served if you answer a question within 2 weeks when I have a problem with my main driver, even in retirement. I think this, yep, he was the one. So, mm-hmm. Jesse says, I can't wait a month for an answer to a question. Anyway, Bill, did you wait a month to determine to buy the solution to your radio license problem? Well, I answered that question.
Yeah, and that is something that when we first started the podcast and for many years, I would respond to emails right away. And in recent years, I have not been doing that and relying on the responses in the podcast to answer the questions. But Lee, you make a very good point that if you have a question, you've got a problem, you need a solution right away, or as close to right away as we can manage. And that's something that hopefully we'll be able to address going forward.
Yeah. And just throwing this out, there's other resources available too. So if you, if there is a lag time between when we get the email and when we record, I encourage you to always go to the forums for the distributions. A lot of times there's the stuff's already there and kind of locked. If you're having problems, try this type of thing. And a lot of times, because he said he was using Linux Mint, they're pretty helpful over there. So if there's something that you need an answer to right away, try that also. I mean, we're still going to try to do better, but you have other options that you can try before, because like I said, by the time we get it, record it, edit the podcast and get it out, you could have been waiting longer than a month. So just throwing that out mm-hmm. there. We try to answer as fast as we can, but like both of us, I work a full-time job. I think, Larry's just moved. I mean, real life gets in the way. Yep. So we try our best, but we will see if we can't do a little better.
Yes.
Okay. So, and then we asked, what is the best time for a new episode to land? He says he didn't have any opinion on our timings. Some of our subscribe pops drop, his subscribe podcast drops 5 days per week. So I'm updating at least 5 days out of seven. Okay. Fair enough.
Yep.
Now we did ask him, what's the best episode length? What do you have a preference? And he says 30 to 60 minutes is typical mm-hmm. for my subscriptions. I can't focus longer than 60 minutes. So my preference is to set the length to match the topic, but 45 to 60 minutes max. I usually delete without listening when Bill Simmons makes one over 90 minutes. Who's Bill Simmons?
I don't know, and I didn't take the time to look up who Bill Simmons is, but another podcaster, I'm sure. So, interesting. Yeah, we've got varying answers to this question, but there is a pattern, and we'll find out what those are as we continue to read on.
Okay. Then we asked and said we wanted to be relevant, so we said, what topics are you interested in hearing more about? And he writes, when I started learning about Linux, I wanted something basic so I could build vocabulary. At the time, late night Linux was beyond me. Your pod was covering the items I needed to know about. So between you plus Jack Wallen at ZDNet and the folks at It's False, you provided the topics I needed to develop a basic understanding. Cool. So we're glad we could offer some of that.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that we want to keep doing that for sure.
Okay. So, and then we ask, what show format do you prefer? Commentary, question and answer, interviews, tutorials? He says, I enjoy your commentary with each other and your tutorials. While I appreciate the respect you show to those who submit questions as you provide detailed responses, these can drag as compared to your other offerings. If I was still working, I would skip many of these. Okay, fair enough. Not everything is, I guess not everybody enjoys every element that we do. Yep. So I get it. And we appreciate that feedback. And I think we have a pattern for that too. And we asked, what one change would you have the most value for you? What could we change to make this even better? I would like you to alter format to cover a topic and answer questions in the same episode, whether the question and answer is last or first. I leave to you. My other podcasts have a rhythm, a pace, and I hear but can't articulate. When I'm listening to your older podcasts, I could stack up 3 to 5 and group them. The group would have a rhythm. Listening to yours now, as they arrive, they lack rhythm. I believe it is due to you offering 6 topics per year. And he says, that's easy for me to say as a retiree and likely a huge challenge to folks still in the workplace. And you are not wrong. Appreciate you being very blunt, and we're not going to make an excuse. As work has gotten busier, the only excuse is, well, we're going to offer one. But as Larry's moved, I've moved, we've worked, we've had illness people, it's just the job.
The job and life, yeah. Life getting in the way as well, yeah.
For a while, we didn't have as much time to dedicate, but we didn't want to just not do anything. So I think we've covered more than 6 topics a year, but I get what you're saying. That's a good feedback as far as how you would like it altered.
Yeah, some of the other feedback we've gotten has provided some alternative formats. So I think, Lee, yours has a lot of value, and I've thought about that as well, even before asking the questions of our listeners. But there's some valid other ways of formatting the show, so we may or may not do that, but we'll have some sort of version, I think, early on, since this is the first feedback we've gotten. I think we will likely make some sort of change to the format, but what that will actually look like, I'd like to get a little bit more feedback before we make a decision on that.
Yeah. I do want to point out that he was very nice in putting all the time codes, so he really worked hard on it. So I wanted to thank him very much for this. This is very detailed and very well written. So thank you, Lee.
Yes, thank you very much. Okay, and moving along then, Ken, the small box admin, a longtime listener, provided some additional perspective for us to consider, and we'll read that now. He writes, Hi Larry and Bill. You all know me as the small box admin, and I've been using Linux since the 90s. Yes, I'm old. I also have had the honor of meeting Larry in person at Southern California Linux Expo, which I have also presented at. I'm not only a Linux enthusiast, I use Linux desktops and servers daily in my real-life job. I've been a fan of the show for many years, back to the Tom days. Tom is a co-host in our first few years. I would like the show to not only continue, but become the foremost podcast for Linux users. Below are my thoughts on the questions you asked. 1. Does your current release schedule work for you? The release schedule is not on a regular cadence. I like the listener feedback and in-depth format twice a month. I know life happens, but a regular schedule does help me be a more regular listener. Yeah, that's right. And originally, this was meant to be 2 episodes a month, you know, one at the beginning of the month, one towards the end of the month. And we've gotten away from that, as we've discussed many times. Life and work have gotten in the way of getting things done here, using Linux or not using Linux. So, yeah, we want to get back to a more regular cadence for sure. Two, what is the best time for a new episode to land? As long as there are regular releases and I know when an episode is scheduled to be released, the time would not matter to me. And that's a really good point. The consistency seems to be a key thing that most people are looking for, more than, you know, once a week, once a day, once a month. If we can provide some consistency and predictability as to when episodes would be available to listen to, that would help people become more consistent listeners and provide more feedback, I'm sure.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do agree with that. We've talked about it amongst ourselves. We're like, oh, man, you know, work or, you know, something that you had going on. So it's, yeah, we get it. We really do understand.
Yes. Okay, next one is, do you have a preference on the episode length? And he simply states, for podcasts, 20 to 30 minutes works, but even longer, 1 hour maximum, depending on the topic and the detail. And that seems to be a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
What topics are you interested in hearing more about? He has a whole list. Home labs are a big topic, he says. Media servers, Raspberry Pi as a desktop alternative. Other single board computers like RISC-V, mini PCs, desktop virtualization software, containers, BSD, Unix variants, monitoring and troubleshooting Linux, shell scripting, automating everyday tasks, fun Linux projects, learning Linux resources, Linux in education, certifications, getting a Linux job. I have many more topic ideas, but this is long enough for now. Yeah, and that's quite a varied list, from new user to experienced user and tinkering users. So that's a really good list, and we're interested in hearing more from listeners as to what other topics they want to hear.
Yeah, some good ideas in there. I don't know if all of them are can be done by us. And that's okay, but I think a good many of these could be done. And the only thing that I really worry about is, I would say about half of them would fit really easily into the show. The others might be more involved, you know, like setting up containers, media servers, stuff like that. I believe there's other podcasts that can do that better than we, because I don't run the media servers and I don't run containers. You know, automating everyday tasks, yeah, that's actually something I would be interested in. Mini PCs, you know, those are pretty cool. But, you know, as far as, you know, doing like reviews of or testing out single board computers like RISC-V, you know, that's a really cool idea, but don't know if we really, how that would benefit a new user coming to Linux. But I'm not saying it wouldn't, I'm just trying to think of it. Certifications, that would work. You know, so there's a lot of good things in there, but some of it might be a little bit more than we want to tackle. What do you think, Larry?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about this a lot, especially those topics that you just mentioned are a little bit too detailed for our podcast. Either because we typically wouldn't have the time to go out and purchase a mini PC, for example, and then look at how to set it up. And that could be a YouTube video pretty easily. And I've thought about doing YouTube videos, but there are a lot of them out there, especially on some of these topics. So the other thing I was thinking is maybe we could do an overview of one of the topics and then provide links to some of the more detailed resources that people can use to learn more.
Yeah, that's actually
that's something we could do. Yeah, so we'll consider that for sure.
The one thing that we both don't want to to do is become so focused on like home labs, or I'm just throwing out, or like Linux certifications. Those, if for someone coming to just listen to a podcast, they might and just learn about Linux or how to get things done. Certifications and media servers are not really in that wheelhouse. So we don't want to, someone come in and say, well, they have nothing to offer me because they're talking about it, more advanced topics. And I think that mm-hmm. our last one from Lee kind of says he come to learn about the vocabulary and learning the basic concepts. So I think that's kind of where our strengths are helping people become even more comfortable using Linux. And then, you know, there's so many other great resources that do the media servers and the Raspberry Pis and the mini PCs and, you know, stuff like that, that they have whole series. But once you got the base, then if you're still interested, there's all of these other resources. We've got to just kind of keep expectations kind of just grounded in what we're good at, or we try to be good at. I'll say, oh, we're okay at. So that's the only thing is, these are great ideas, but I don't know if we can really incorporate them, because we might actually make a new person come and overwhelm them, and we try not to do that.
Yeah. And as Lee was saying, the first email that we read that addresses these questions, a variety of changing the format so that we cover introductory questions and then more detailed questions for more experienced users, and adding on additional topics might be something that we could do if we think about how to use our strengths to address some of the topics we don't have the technical depth in, or we don't have the right format or time to go into, or the budget to purchase some of this hardware so we can experiment around. But there might be a way for us to do some sort of overview and then point you in a direction where you can find more information. I think that's, as I think about it, that's more and more what I think the direction is we should see. But let's see what some of our other listeners say. Continuing on, though, with number 6 from Ken, what one change would have the most value for you as a listener? Ken writes, I feel that a regular release schedule would lead to more engagement, not only as feedback, but for Discord channel too. The Discord channel has very little engagement. That's my 2 cents. If I can help in any way, I would love to be more engaged with the podcast and Going Linux community, Ken.
All right.
Well, thanks for the offer, Ken. As we figure out what we want to do going forward, you and I, Bill, have discussed giving our listeners some way of getting a little more involved. Mm-hmm. And Ken, we may be picking your brain as to how we can move this forward.
Yeah. So a lot of good information and feedback, Ken. So thank you very much.
Yes.
Okay, our next one comes from Josh, and he wrote a little bit about his Linux journey along with his feedback. He said, Hi, Larry and Bill. I hope you are doing well. I wanted to reach out and thank you both for making my journey into Linux possible. I initially started listening to your show as a way to pass the time while driving, and over time I was completely converted. You helped me realize that Linux is not nearly as scary as I once imagined. I started out using Xorin OS 18.1 and haven't even turned on my old Windows 11 PC in over a month. I have even set up a small home lab running Ubuntu Server 2604, and the things you can do with it still amaze me. Regarding the discussion in your last episode about the show's format, I think a twice-a-month schedule would be great. I personally prefer longer episodes because I really enjoy the back-and-forth between the two of you. Listening to the show feels like hanging out with old friends. If you are looking for future topic suggestions, I'd love to hear an episode focused on users, groups, and permissions in Linux. Permissions are still the one area that occasionally trips me up. Thank you again for the fantastic show and keep up the great work. Best regards, Josh in Middle Tennessee. Also, I did use AI to polish my rambling. That's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we all do that now, or many of us do. That's for sure. Well, thanks for the suggestions, Josh. And although your feedback is not as long as the other ones we've received, you've got some really good ideas in there. And thanks. We really appreciate the transparency on what you think.
Yes, thank you very much. And by the way, Zorin is an excellent one to start with. So congratulations. That works really well. They have a lot of stuff built in. And I was kind of curious, did you go with the Pro or did you go with the base version? I'd just like to know out of for my own curiosity, because I've run Zorin before and really liked it. And I think it's probably one of the most complete ones for someone to use when they're just moving away from Windows or Mac, because they can change the interface on the Pro version. So appreciate it.
Yep. Okay, so our last email is a long one. And for listeners who have been around a while, you may actually know who it's from, because this particular listener usually has a lot to say, and it's always very valuable. So David in Israel provided us with his opinion and some what he's calling tough love. And we love that. Hi, guys. I'm impressed that you are doing this performance review, making sure that you are addressing the needs and expectations of your listeners. This is very timely. Your original mandate was to help those who are going Linux. That is newbies, or those thinking of becoming newbies, and those who want to get things done using Linux. It feels like that focus has drifted. You now seem to be aiming at people who are already well into Linux at a technical level. I've listened for a long time, I think starting about episode 5. So my opinion is based on both what you were doing now and what you were doing back in the day. To be honest and blunt, consider this tough love, but nowadays I find your episodes boring and uninteresting with a few tidbits that wake me up. Well, at least we're keeping you awake sometime. Yeah. And sorry to make you feel bored. I think some of that is due to the fact that you've become a regular Linux user, and some of the topics we cover are introductory. That could cause the boredom, but our intention here is not to bore people, for sure. So let's get on with some more of what David has to say. He says, to be fair, this is due to my personal interests, age, knowledge, and capabilities, not those of your target audience. I am neither a newbie, a gamer, nor a techie. I am just a user who wants to get things done, in my case, 95% fulfilled by my Linux, Mint, Firefox, and LibreOffice. So I listen more for old time's sake and curiosity. Well, thanks. Sometimes it's while walking the dog, and lately it's increasingly while I have one of my more frequent lie downs. I do enjoy, though, the banter spiced with contrast between Larry's normal to me Southern Ontario bland accent and manner of speech with Bill's distinctive down-to-earth elocution. A winning combo.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah, that's good.
You're eloquent.
Yes,
And I'm bland. Sorry. He continues, I went into your website to copy the question you asked from your show notes. While there, I noticed Larry is now in San Antonio area. Why and when did you leave Southern California, Larry? Maybe I missed it while dozing. By the way, you mentioned that you are not getting as many questions. I did email you one on December 5th, 2025, with a PS on December 6th, to which you unusually did not respond via email or include in the episode. I have added them below. So we'll cover those after the fact, but I apologize for not getting back to you. Somehow that has slipped through the cracks, and one of the big cracks, apparently. So we'll address that at the end of today's episode here in the tradition of the old-time listener feedback that we have, answering people's questions. For what it's worth, I have no problem with you continuing as you are, but if, based on the feedback you receive, your goal is to refresh the podcast and steer it back towards your original mandate, the following simple suggestions may help. Before I get into that, answer to your question about the move to San Antonio, I think it was partially to be closer to my kids, who are now all in the San Antonio area, and also partially to get out of the overtaxed and overregulated and over-political California scene, as well as a layoff in my job and a decision to retire rather than look for an additional new job. So life has changed a lot, and as a result, the time to spend on the podcast for me personally has kind of dwindled a bit, but hopefully we'll be able to rectify that going forward.
Yeah, it's life has changed for us for a lot, hasn't it, actually?
Yes, it has.
Well, all right.
And not all for the better.
No.
And any other comments before we move on?
No, but he has some great feedback.
Yep. Continuing with David's email, right now you basically have two streams, topic and feedback. I consider three clearer streams. They don't need to be separate podcasts, but they should be well-titled so listeners can pick what interests them. The first is the original Going Linux, aimed at newbies and wannabe newbies. Most of these episodes exist and can probably be reissued. What is Linux? Why go to Linux? How to choose a distro? How to install? How to convert from Windows or Mac without bad-mouthing either? How to get things done, i.e. basic software choices, connecting to printers, etc. Where our strength is, for sure. The second is Gone Linux, for people who already use Linux but want to work smoothly for real life, similar to your current topics, but less in the weeds, and more how to keep getting things done in a practical, GUI-based way. In addition, topics of interest to current and prospective users of Linux can be included, such as how open source works, AI, and yes, Bill, ham radio and gaming. Also, there can be what's new episodes on things such as Wayland replacing X11, and how the change will affect Linux users. This is also the stream that can include interviews. Back in the day, I remember episodes about Linux for visually impaired. They were fascinating.
Okay.
Yeah, that second one, David, reminds me of the fact that many of the Linux podcasts that I have listened to, partially to get ideas for our podcast, but also partially to learn about Linux myself, have more of a variety podcast feel, so that each episode has a number of topics that they title and have segments. And that's something that I want to consider as well. Maybe we have a segment for the new user and a segment for the user who has already gone Linux but wants to learn more about it. And the third one, which is feedback, I don't want to lose the feedback aspect of things. And many other podcasts do that too, not just Linux podcasts. Yeah. What do you think, Bill?
I kind of like the idea, but the only thing that I see is that the first and second are actually kind of, except for a few items he mentioned there, are kind of our wheelhouse, you know.
Yeah.
The GUI way of installing stuff, that's new user stuff, or old user stuff, or how open source works, we've covered that. AI, that's something that is, I use AI, I love it. It works, helps me write better. Well, write better than usual. But, you know, gaming and ham radio, those are fun. Now, we got to remember now, not all our listeners are ham radio operators, might not even be interested in it. But there's always, they actually do have quite a few resources in the open source for amateur radio operators, plus gaming. Still play games, and they're getting better with Proton stuff. So these are all new things that people will want to know about and how to go about doing it. But I don't really think that including that as like Wayland replacing X, a lot of times, as you know, Lee and some of the others have said, they just want it to work. They don't really care about the underlining of why it, what's changing, why they're changing. They just want it to work. And what I keep seeing is that they don't like quite as much in the weeds. They want a kind of like a topic overview. This is how to get it to work. This is what you need to do to make it work. And that's about the extent of what they want. If I'm reading this right, and we'll talk about this, you know, back and forth. But what do you think, Larry? Does the one and two can be kind of combined?
Yeah, I think you make some valid points. I think we need a little bit more feedback from other people to give us a little broader perspective on what more than these three or four people have to say.
Yes.
They not to diminish what they have to say, because it's very important.
It is.
And a lot of it, like we've said, is it reveals a pattern to what people are looking for. And one of the things that I take from what David says is we want to be a little bit more deliberate about identifying what kind of an episode it is, or what kind of a segment, if we decide to do segments in a single episode. Just so that if you're interested in it, you can listen. If you're not, you can skip it, or just continue listening just out of curiosity. And the idea of us not covering topics that are in our technical wheelhouse, you make some good points that maybe we should steer away from those. But my personal thought here is maybe we should cover the overview to define what it is the person is asking us or the topic is covering, and then, as I've said before, provide some more detailed resources as to where to find, where to find the answers, or more details or technical discussions and that sort of thing. And that may be other podcasts, that may be articles that people have written. And that sort of content. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if they ask something and it's not really something that, you know, we can, it's in our, I'm just using this term, wheelhouse, we can say this is how it works, or this is what it does. This is how it makes, it affects getting things done. But if you're interested, then here's some additional resources for you to follow up with.
Right.
That's basically what I was saying, is there's certain things that, because I keep seeing that there's that, when we get in the weeds, it tends to, break the rhythm or flow of the podcast. So if maybe we can tighten it up, if it isn't something that we're going to be able to cover adequately, we can send them to other resources. Cause hey, we're all about, Linux is, and open source is huge. There's lots of great people that can provide better or more thorough, or that's what they do, on the subjects that we're not quite as competent. Yeah, I think that's a good way.
Yeah, and one of the other patterns that I've seen so far is an interest in Linux news. What's new with Linux, and where are things going with Linux? And not something that we typically do a lot of research on, but it is something we can talk about in general terms, and again, provide some links as to some of the more timely topics. One of the issues we have had with covering news is that by the time we identify what's new and put it in a podcast, do the recording, do the editing, do the publishing. It's usually old news by that time. So maybe we can cover news, but we've got to think about how can we do that in a way that's going to make sense to people. So I think you and I need to talk about that a little bit, but let's get on with David's questions. Yeah. So he continues, okay, here are your questions and my answers. Does our current release schedule work for you? No problem, but if you do a multi-episode topic, keep parts within a week of each other. So, yeah, don't split them up with other things in between. And so that kind of goes against the 1 week listener feedback, another week more general topic, and then listener feedback, and then the next one, the second half of the topic. I get that. That's always bugged me about some of the longer topics, but good answer for that one, David.
Yeah.
What do you think, Bill?
Yeah, I think he's right.
Yeah.
In my opinion, we can do better as we focus. I think it'll become much more streamlined.
Yep. Next question was, what is the best time for a new episode to land? His answer, silly question, whenever. You are a podcast, after all, with an emphasis on the POD, and he identifies that as programming on demand. Also, many listeners are not in your time zone. For example, I'm 7 hours from Eastern North America.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Fair.
yep. Do you have a preference on episode length? His answer is 30 minutes, give or take. Well, this one's going to be significantly longer than that, but
yeah.
That's because we've got a lot of feedback. So what topics are you interested in hearing more about? His answer is current things that may affect me getting things done, like Wayland. See above. Yep, we just talked about that. as to the show format, commentary, Q&A, interviews, tutorials, all have their place, is what he says. And they do. how do we present those, though? That's
yeah.
Something we have to figure out. What one change would have the most value for you as a listener? Get out of the weeds and back to how to get things done. Yeah, I tend to agree with that, but I don't want to stop getting into the weeds where we have some expertise or we have some interest in the topic and want to get into the weeds, because I know, as others have suggested here, there are many people who want to get into the weeds on some of these.
Okay.
And his regular sign-off, bestest David, official going Linux expat, Canadian minion.
Okay. But you know what, Larry? We missed an email from David. And here's the one from December 5th, 2025. So he this is the ones he said that we didn't that you didn't answer. So we're gonna answer him now. It says in my cups. He said, and he he says, no guys, I'm not drunk. And this letter is about an exciting week with cups, a techie in the weeds issue, but which underlines a more philosophical question, the maintenance and reliability of Linux distros functionality used to get stuff done, either for personal use or for business. In this situation, many Linux, Mint and Ubuntu users were unable to print for a week. I don't think this is feedback. This is a feedback letter for reading out, but more of an example of underlying a general discussion. Up to you on how, on what course, whether or not to include this in the show and how to handle it. But in any case, I would appreciate your comments.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm not going to read all of his email, although looking at what we've got in front of us here, you may think this is his entire email, but no, it's... Yeah. It is much, much longer, and we'll have links to David's experience in trying to solve his problem on printing. He writes, from Friday, November 28th to Friday, December 5th, a full week, many Linux users were unable to print. And he provides a link to a topic for details, and we'll have that link in the show notes. Linux Mint has a well-earned reputation for stability as a result of its wide use by non-technical home users and small businesses. An outage that prevents printing, one of the most basic and essential tasks for an entire week, reflects poorly on that reputation. For some users, this could even push them back toward the perceived reliability of Windows. During the incident, workarounds were quickly posted. They were well explained, but realistically not something most non-technical users would attempt, and not something they would even find unless they already knew to check the Linux Mint forums. In other words, many of the people most reliant on printing were unable to apply the fixes. To be clear, this is not a criticism of the wonderful volunteers who support Linux Mint and its particular case, Ubuntu and Cups, which is the printing application that Linux uses. Far from it. However, printing is critical for many users. Should Linux Mint have provided an interim fix sooner, perhaps by testing, packaging, and pushing one of the workarounds? For such an essential function, the disruption ideally should have lasted hours, not a full week. In this case, did waiting for a complete fix allow the perfect to be the enemy of the good? While forum contributors provided working temporary solutions, it provides that it feels that in this case, the Linux Mint maintainers were focused on resolving the underlying technical issue rather than restoring the printing capability that real users depend on. I contend that in cases like this, a quick, tested interim fix, even if imperfect, should be prioritized pending a proper resolution. Functionality needs to come first.
I do have some comments on this. I had heard about this. I don't have a printer. Everything I do is digital. But besides that, I do want to bring some expectations. The developers of Linux Mint use Ubuntu base. So if this was pushed out by Ubuntu, then they're trying to fix something Ubuntu did. So, you know, it's not as easy as just finding it, fixing it, and sending it back upstream and getting a simple patch out. Sometimes they have to go through these steps to learn what's going on and how to fix it without breaking something else. Because, you know, you break, fix one thing, you break something else. That's usually how my process works. So, I know you didn't say it, you know, but you just got to remember, they are volunteers. The people that do a lot of this work are not paid, and sometimes it's a one-man team, so or two-man team, or very small. So, yeah, I agree with you in theory, but we got to understand that sometimes we don't know the whole how they go about fixing stuff. Sometimes it's easier to look from the outside in and not know what they have to do. So they did try, and I realized some of it wasn't easy. You know, things break, but you know, Linux and open source usually does not have a dedicated development team, and you know, that's all they do is fit, you know, they're on call 24/7 or anything like that. So just kind of sometimes you have to give them a little grace, and sometimes you know, while the forum contributors were providing temporary workarounds, you know, the real developers were working on it, but sometimes you have to understand why it's rigged and fix it.
Yeah, absolutely. And these development teams are, especially in open source, are smaller than you might think, as you alluded to. I don't know the size of the Linux Mint team, but I imagine that it's smaller than any of us imagine. So that's number one. And number two, this involved Linux. It involved the Mint version of Linux. I'm assuming Cinnamon was the one, you know, the desktop. And then it involved Cups, the printing software. So the problem could have been many places or a combination of things. So it would have been very difficult, at least initially, to try to diagnose what is causing the problem, which is really the first step. And, you know, interestingly, as I think back to November of last year, I think I had experienced this problem myself.
Did you?
Yeah, I think so. Because for a while there, I couldn't get things to print. And I was wondering, you know, is there something wrong with my printer? Is there something wrong with was something introduced in an upgrade or something like that? Things would print from my phone. And I just thought, okay, well, if this is a problem, things were working for a long time. If this is a problem right now, I am going to wait it out, and I know the Linux Mint team will figure it out and make it work. So I just printed from my phone. It was fortunately something that I could do that for. Not everyone has that luxury, but another interesting thing is one problem that I helped resolve for not a Linux user, another computer user. And it's not specific to Linux, although it would be a problem on Linux as well. And it might have a bearing just in terms of similar sort of diagnostic pattern here. Something similar because it was affecting a printer. So my daughter had moved into a new house, set everything up, and every once in a while, her printer would not connect. She wasn't able to print, but she diagnosed that she was losing connection to the network in her house. And so, after asking a few questions, it turns out that she had set up Wi-Fi for her house on the router that was provided by the internet service provider, in this case AT&T. And then she got a number of, what are they called? It's a mesh wireless system. So she had like three different units, all under the control of TP-Link, right? So she set that up. And she had used the same network name. And it turns out that's what was causing the problem. The printer would connect to AT&T's Wi-Fi, and then it would connect, disconnect there and connect over to TP-Link's, and it got confused. And so I had her turn off AT&T's Wi-Fi, since she had her TP-Link router connected by cable to the router, and that solved the problem. So many, many different solutions, but you have to take it step by step and figure it out, and that can take some time. But your point's well taken, David, that if possible, they could have, or maybe they couldn't, but it would be nice if they had been able to push out a temporary fix and then follow it up with a final fix.
Yeah.
Maybe that just wasn't possible in this case.
So he writes, so here's my concern. For a full week, many Linux, Mint, and Ubuntu users simply could not print. Their distributions have a reputation of being stable choices for non-technical users and small businesses. Yet this incident left many of them without a basic essential function. That understandably reflects poorly on Linux and could push some users back to the perceived reliability of Windows. I am certain not criticizing the wonderful volunteers who maintain CUPS, Ubuntu or Linux Mint, far from it, but printing is critical for many users. Should Linux Mint and Ubuntu not have provided a temporary fix ASAP, perhaps based on one of the forum workarounds, the disruption should have only lasted a few hours, not a full week, without a functioning printer. In this case, was waiting for a complete fix, letting the perfect be the enemy of the good? It feels as though the powers that be were more focused on the technologies than on the functionality that real users depend on. I'd love to hear your thoughts, both about the bug itself, how it was addressed, and as shown in the forums, and the broader questions it raises. Bestest, David, official Going Linux expat Canadian Minion. I think we covered a lot of that, Larry, but, you know, like, we both know that Windows has had these same type of issues, and sometimes I think what might be lost, and this is something, you know, developers could maybe take a few minutes to post about, is if they're working on something, maybe saying, hey, we're looking at this. This is kind of the high level overview. You don't have to go into, you know, but let people know that this is what we're working on. That's the kind of only thing I think, maybe better communication. I mean, I'm not saying that David's not wrong, but I'm just saying maybe work kind of like, what, here's what we're doing to fix this problem. This is where we're at.
Yeah.
Because we really don't know exactly, without being developers ourselves, you know, going in and, you know, saying, okay, why is this being caused? Was it just a bad driver? Was it a bad library? Was it, you know, was there a missing semicolon? We don't know. You know, software's not perfect. That's why a lot of the commercial OSs that we love and fear at the same time have frequent updates. But I do want to say I really do appreciate you bringing these, because they are valid concerns. I just think maybe communication would solve a lot of this. And one last thing, most business users do not automatically upgrade to the latest version. They probably, quite a few of them didn't even have the bug unless they had automatic updates on. I know if you are any sizable organization, they usually have let's wait and see before we install the latest.
Yeah, and I think that in this case would have helped.
Yeah.
Many big organizations that have things like uptime guarantees for their users, typically for proprietary software, will have a system by which if something goes wrong that they need to take some time to fix, they will have a regular schedule of planned updates to provide users with some feedback that A, they're working on it, and B, what they've done so far, what is left to do, and C, when they expect, if they know, when they expect to have a solution for the problem or an interim solution for the problem. But communicating about it officially from the project might be something that would have some value to folks, just in terms of letting people know that, yeah, we know there's a problem, we're working on it, here's what we're doing, here's our progress, and here's what we expect the solution to be, if that's even something you can address.
Yep.
Better communication is something we can all work on, for sure. And, you know, this illustrates one of the downsides to open source software. Because it's run by volunteers in many cases, and because the development may go on by a number of people who are working part-time, that works for things that are planned and work according to that plan. But when something goes wrong, it can have some big effects on people. Just some thoughts from me based on my experience both in the proprietary software world and in the open source world, because I've worked on both kinds of projects. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you, Lee. Thank you, David. Thank you,
Josh.
Ken. And thank you, Josh, for everything that you've provided us. We're hoping to have some more feedback in our next episode. And I'm very interested in some diverging opinions or some agreement on what folks have told us. In particular, if you can't address all of the questions we have, just pick one. Pick the most important one and let us know what is the most important to you and provide us some feedback on that. We're going to consider it all before making any sorts of decisions. So we'll have a few more episodes that are in the kinds of formats that we have been used to doing.
Yeah, and we're going to use for the old-time listeners, and we're not going to unbolt the jet engine until we figure out what we need to do. But for those of you who are long-time listeners, Tom, that was a famous thing of unbolting the jet engine while we're flying. That was, I think, Nightwise gave that to him.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I appreciate all the information, feedback, and tough love. Thank you, David. And we will take it all to heart.
Yes, absolutely. And we're looking for more feedback, of course.
Of course.
And until then, you can go to our website at goinglinux.com for articles and show notes, as well as links to download and subscribe. We provide the website for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
And if you like, you can participate directly with our friendly and helpful community members by joining the discussion in our Going Linux podcast community on community.goinglinux.com.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
73.